Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. Although there has been a marked shift in employee priorities in recent years towards things like flexibility and alignment of personal values to company values, the right pay and the right perks still matter for many. And in the war for talent and retention, many companies are putting even more energy towards crafting their reward offering. So to talk about the topic of reward today, we're delighted to be joined by an expert in the world of reward, previously working with big names such as Kerry Group, Mercer and more, and now Director of Coakley Actuarial Rewards Consulting. It's Oliver Coakley. Thank you for joining us, Oliver. How are you?
Hi, Owen. I'm very good. Thank you.
Brilliant. And as always, we're also joined by our very own Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Owen. Welcome, Oliver.
Thanks a lot, Mary. Great to be here.
Brilliant stuff. So let's jump right in. So I suppose I'll come to yourself first, Oliver. So I suppose to kind of kick us off, when we speak about reward, what's your kind of view on what it is and more importantly, what it isn't?
So when I think about reward programs, I suppose I think about four kind of key buckets or categories on. First, you know, a lot of this won't be, you know, a great surprise to anybody. First, I think you've got your core compensation program, such as your base salary, your incentives, you know, so incentives being your bonus programs or your sales incentive plans and long-term incentive plans. Secondly, then I think you have what I call your traditional benefits. So these are, you know, the employee benefits, which, you know, employees and candidates would generally expect you to have. So in an Irish context, examples would be pension or life assurance, sick pay, holidays, and maybe even medical insurance, to be honest, in the current environment. The third category, though, I think is really important, and I call it the non-traditional benefits or sometimes, you know, growth benefits. And these are kind of those areas which really allow an employer to differentiate themselves from the pack. So, you know, generally there are benefits that send quite a strong signal about the culture or the values of an organization and what it wants to be known for as it relates to rewards. So some, you know, of the examples within that space might be some of your non-traditional leave benefits, whether it's, you know, generous leave for new parents or paid sabbatical leave. You might have some well-being offerings in there, such as, you know, gym memberships or, you know, comprehensive health checkups, you know, stuff like on-site benefits, whether that's free food or in the case of some larger employers, maybe childcare support, whether that's on-site or backup sort of daycare. And that whole area of non-traditional benefits has been a huge area of growth over the course of the last decade, particularly as many of the global tech and other companies have established major hubs in Ireland. The fourth area or category is around hybrid and remote working. And I'm being quite deliberate about calling this out separately because I think it's really, really critical. You know, it's an area that has really burst onto the scene over the course of the last couple of years for obvious reasons. And, you know, employees really, really value the flexibility to be able to choose where and when work gets done. I know it's now probably one of the first questions that a candidate will explore and one of the first that they'll actually filter in terms of determining where they want to work. So it's a really, really critical one for organizations to think about and to get right, particularly given the current competitiveness in the market for talent. And then finally, what I'd say, Owen, is don't forget about your career growth and professional development. So, you know, areas that aren't traditionally seen as being part of a reward. But again, if you put yourself into the shoes of a candidate or an employee, especially those, you know, in the more recent demographic cohorts to the workplace, they'll often view professional growth, career growth and development as being just as valuable, if not more valuable than many of the benefit programs.
And I suppose given the amount of things you've even summarized it fairly well there, Oliver, but the amount of things that go with that, I suppose a reward kind of framework is probably important for companies as well, trying to keep it all within a set framework. Would that be right? Is it important for companies to implement one of those to kind of keep it all structured?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. And, you know, a reward framework, is something that helps set out your vision for rewards, the strategy for rewards, as well as lots of the bits and pieces that you need to have in place to make reward come to life. So to me, a reward framework consists of three kind of layers or foundations, really. You've got your philosophy, your actual reward programs themselves, and then your delivery infrastructure. So maybe if I take each of those in turn, you know, so your philosophy, that's really your North Star. It helps guide you as you make decisions on your individual reward programs. It helps you to define what does reward mean in your organization and how does it support your longer term sort of business strategy. So, you know, developing that philosophy, you know, requires you to really think deep and get a clear understanding of where is the business going, what's your talent strategy that you need to drive that growth. Where is that talent going to come from? What industries, what organizations, maybe even what countries? And how should your reward programs then be positioned versus your talent competitors? And even within your own organization, think about, you know, what are those critical talent segments or roles within your organization where it may be very advantageous for you to really have top talent in place in those roles, but to have a differentiated reward philosophy to align with that objective. So, I think that's really the first critical foundation stone of any reward framework. And I think if you are working with an executive leadership team, you want that leadership team to have confidence that the North Star for your reward programs can really help you to use reward as a strategic lever, if I can put it like that, in growing your business. Then I think you've got the programs themselves, right? And that's really the easier piece. I think once you've developed the philosophy with your executive team, you're kind of clear on the direction in terms of where you want to go to. And you've got a CEO or a leadership team that in principle would be very supportive of that because they've co-authored that strategy with you. And I think that then gives you the framework within which you can look at your current reward programs and begin to map out a change journey, as you begin to sort of align your comp and benefit programs with that vision, whether it's around how you're positioned or, you know, whether it's about how you reward individual versus team versus group-wide success in your organization. So that kind of philosophy or North Star allows you then to sort of craft and change your reward programs in a way that's aligned with where you're trying to drive your business. And then the final piece I'd say, Owen, is around the final kind of piece of that framework is around your reward infrastructure, right? So your reward infrastructure is what supports the delivery of reward in your organization. So it's the plumbing that you need to make reward as consistent and as efficient as possible. So it's everything from, you know, does the organization, have a well-defined operating model and an org design that supports this model? You know, have you defined the jobs that sit in your org design? Have they been clearly defined? Have they been sized in a way that's objective? Do you have pay benchmarks or pay ranges around that? And How are you engaging with employees on reward? And is that effective? Are you able to communicate the total reward package? And are you giving them choice, giving them flexibility to be able to tailor their package in a way that's personalized and meaningful to them? So that's kind of how we think of a reward framework, the three pillars again being kind of your philosophy or your North Star, the reward programs themselves, and then your infrastructure that supports the delivery of that to your people in a way that is meaningful and get you the return on investment that rewards deserve.
Brilliant. So I suppose as Oliver has kind of alluded to there, Mary, I think obviously given the amount of areas that this kind of touches upon, it's obviously there's a lot to it. It's going to affect a lot of different things within the workplace. Is this typically kind of a challenging area for HR teams, a tough one to get right?
Yeah, well, at the moment you've got the war for talent, don't you? And it seems that every time you lose someone, you have to replace them at a higher cost. There's a huge, huge demand for flexibility, remote working, hybrid working, working in a way that suits the individual. So, you know, reward has really come to the forefront again in terms of, you know, attracting and retaining your talent. And, you know, you're seeing some really fantastic offerings out there. And so, yes, it is a challenge for every HR leader and HR team out there, because what's important is you don't want people to leave your organization and find roles that are paying way better than the roles that you have on offer, and at the same time have a range of benefits that you haven't even thought about. So I really agree with Oliver, like everything in HR, it's got to be strategic. You've got to think about the why we need to do this. And too often I see, HR and its activities not clearly aligned to the business strategy. Remember, you know, if you can't adequately resource the organization, then you can't deliver on the strategy. And if part of delivering on the strategy is resourcing the organization, then we have to be clear about how to attract and retain those people, keep them for the long term so that we can actually deliver. And I think sometimes the thinking isn't all, aligned internally within organizations, and there needs to be much more, I suppose, thought about how we go about doing these things.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, it's something we say about a lot of different topics, but there has been, I suppose, huge change in every aspect of work over the past couple of years. For yourself, Oliver, have you seen much, I suppose, progress, any kind of big changes in reward? I know we kind of alluded to a couple of them there, but particularly over the past couple of years, has there been any major progress really in this area?
Okay, I think Mary has hit the nail on the head there in relation to the biggest challenge that's out there at the moment is the hugely competitive labor market. Employers are finding it extremely difficult to secure the talent that they need. And quite simply, candidates are demanding premiums on rates of pay. So I think for many organizations and for many of the clients I support, it's seriously testing pay ranges that they have in place. It's seriously testing, you know, internal equity in terms of rates of pay for existing employees versus new hires into the organization. So one of the things that I think is becoming clear to many organizations is that competing on traditional compensation and reward alone isn't really sustainable in this market. And I think smart companies out there are being a little bit more creative in their approach to rewards. So, you know, we mentioned hybrid working and remote working earlier. I think smart organizations are really trying to dial up on the flexibility around that, because it is a hugely valued part of the employee value proposition at the moment. You've got some companies that are even creating, you know, work from anywhere type of policies where they're allowing within, you know, certain fairly strict parameters employees to work from various countries outside of Ireland, but again, within certain limits. But what I'm certainly seeing is, you know, a number of organizations that are really dialing up on their non-traditional benefit areas that I mentioned earlier. So you know, and that can include actually, you know, stuff like more holidays, which is often, you know, a soft cost rather than a hard cost, you know, introducing new benefits like paid sabbatical after a certain number of years, you know, or, you know, really dialing up and demonstrating the support that's available to develop employees both professionally, whether it's through internal rotations or career opportunity or formal kind of education reimbursement programs. So that's kind of some of the stuff I'm seeing. But what I would say more fundamentally, in the current environment, I am certainly seeing many organizations that are beginning to sort of reevaluate their employee value propositions. And in particular, their approach to rewards, so that they're clearer in terms of what's the strategic direction and how can we position rewards without necessarily dialing up the spend in a very material way, but how can we reposition it in a way that's smarter and that can allow us to achieve our talent objectives to support the business growth. Mm-hmm.
I think it's something you both kind of mentioned there. Obviously, it's something we constantly mention, the remote working side of things. I suppose, Mary, my question there is, and it's kind of an interesting one, is it more difficult to kind of recognize and reward remote workers? That's a bit of a tongue twister, especially in companies now that have a bit of a hybrid approach. They might have a bit of both, you know, that kind of way.
I don't know if it's more difficult, but it might require more creativity. So no, I don't think it's more difficult, but For those organizations, I guess, that have had a lot of in-house offerings. So, you know, if you look at some of the large players and the canteens and the availability of snacks and drinks and, you know, foosball tables and ice cream machines and all of those things that organizations have competed on in terms of rewards. You work here, you can have anything you want to eat. You know, we'll even make you a white egg omelette if you want, and because we're going to look after your specific requirements in the organizations. And a lot of organizations have spent a lot of money and a lot of time on developing those kind of offerings. Now the people are remote or hybrid, you've seen an increase in the number of gifts coming out to people, but you've also seen things like the cancellation of parties and in-person events and all of those kind of things. What the future holds is definitely going to be different. And I think, you know, do organizations have the confidence yet to really bring teams together and do those in-person events in the same way? Will there be that buzz in the offices, you know, when it comes to treats and things in your home? Are they valued or are they not valued? And are the organization clear about what they're doing and why they're doing it? I think the people who get this stuff right are looking at their own demographic and thinking about the kind of people that they need to attract, hearing the voice of their existing employees in terms of what matters to them, and putting in place creative offerings. That doesn't mean they have to be expensive offerings. And like Oliver says, it's about repositioning and looking at that budget and thinking, what else can we do here? You know, for instance, if you're looking at things like fertility treatments for women, which has become somewhat of a trend with the larger businesses where they're supporting time off for maybe people who've had miscarriages, fertility treatments, you know, freezing of eggs, those kind of things. You know, there's only ever going to be a certain percentage of the population of the organization who takes up those offerings, but wow, they can make a real impact in terms of promoting it and appealing to a particular demographic of women and saying we're supportive of issues for women, which I suppose leads many women to believe that I'm coming into, you know, an equitable organization that values women and wishes to support the things that are important to them. And I could, you know, develop my career here where I'm recognized and seen and cared about and pushed forward. So again, it's really about being smart, because ultimately everything will be costed out. And Oliver, you know far more about this than I do. But for whatever offering you're putting together, you'll have worked out the percentage it's likely to apply to, and therefore the ultimate cost. I'd be really curious, Oliver, in things, you know, particularly some of those things that are, you know, targeted at new parents or women or those. How do you even go about those offerings and considering what the take up of them might be?
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right. You referenced earlier that the, you know, not everybody's going to take up the reward offerings, but actually most people still place a high value on many of those programs because they offer choice, right? The example I go back to many times is the area of holiday buy and allowing people to buy holidays in an organization to supplement maybe, you know, the existing leave that they get. You may never have anything more than 15 or 20% of your workforce who actually take up that offering in any one particular year. But actually the other 80 to 85% of people love the idea of knowing that that option is there for them. So if, you know, my son or my daughter gets married and I want to take extra time off to celebrate the wedding, or if I want to take my family away on the holiday of a lifetime, I have that option to buy more holidays. And I think it's a similar type of psychology around other benefits that maybe not everybody is going to avail of in their time at an organization. But it's the choice and knowing that it's there, should I want to use them. And I think the costing around those benefits will very much reflect the knowledge that not everybody is going to take them up. So therefore you can be a little bit more generous in terms of what you provide, because you know it's not going to be 100% of your workforce. So that level of assumptions, if you like, is typically built into how an organization costs out such reward programs.
It makes it very doable then, doesn't it, Oliver, for, you know, say typically they're the preserve in some ways of their larger organizations like your Google and your LinkedIn's and your Facebook and your eBay, you know, those tech-based industries that are really at the forefront of implementing some of those more progressive policies or reward strategies. But if a smaller business wants to do the same thing, I guess it's really about thinking, right, what could we do? What's our demographic here? Who do we want to attract? How do we want to reward them? And I think that's really interesting. You know, as we see gender pay gap reporting coming in, and I'm sure you and your peers, Oliver, are preparing for the advent of gender pay gap reporting. But again, I think that employers could be really smart about some of this stuff, and, you know, really progressive in terms of the statements they make and the rewards that they put out there, and in terms of even, you know, recruiting more people into male dominated parts of their business, and that in itself bringing about equality, but, you know, selling based on, you know, we're a progressive organization for women, come join us because not only will you receive equal pay, but here are these other benefits that are specific to women, and we recognize and support you.
I absolutely couldn't agree more. I mean, I think the sweet spot in rewards, if I can put it like that, is about how do you get best return for the money that you're spending, right? And many organizations, when you talk to them about reward and reward reviews, automatically think of cost increase, whereas actually, you know, many organizations spend a lot of money in areas that maybe aren't valued by their existing employees. And it's a case actually of just reallocating and being smarter And in many ways, for small to medium sized employers, it can often actually be a lot easier to be creative and inventive than perhaps what you can do with larger organizations, because with larger organizations, you need to be much more clearer around, you know, how it's going to work. Whereas you can actually get much closer to the needs of your employees in a smaller to medium size enterprise and come up with reward programs and designs that are much more tailored and really much closer to the need. So I think there's a huge opportunity for small to medium sized employers to be really a lot more creative and to give a real fighting chance, right, when it comes to competing for talent against the larger organizations out there. Be smarter around, you know, your rewards package and the creativity within that, but also dial up the other non-reward parts of your package as well, in a way which actually the larger competitors out there may struggle to compete with in terms of opportunity for growth, the scope of the role. So I think small to medium-sized employers really have an opportunity to, you know, identify and understand what their strengths are relative to larger companies and use that to their advantage, particularly in the current labor market that we're in.
Yeah, I think it's a very smart approach, because, you know, I've often had clients come to me and say, you know, we want to do what LinkedIn is doing, or we want to do what Facebook are doing. And I look at the organization, I know they don't have the budget, and they're not going to be LinkedIn or Facebook or Google, but they could actually be better in terms of what they're offering a niche group of employees. And, you know, if they think about it and look to the employees will tell you what they want. You know, they're only dying to say what they want.
Yeah.
You know, if they're the most responded to surveys that you can do around reward and recognition, because people are very clear. And sometimes in organizations like that, I remember years ago doing a survey amongst a group of very trendy, young, up-and-coming IT professionals in a very trendy organization that had every form of a game you could play. You could play PlayStation, you could use Xbox, you could do all sorts of things to relax in that organization. And the number one benefit that those employees were concerned about and didn't have was healthcare. That was their number one benefit. And I was staggered, because they had, to me, they had so much that was cool and trendy and fashionable, but the organization had missed a trick because they hadn't asked.
Yeah. I think
they were given the wrong benefits.
Yeah. And I think that touches on another key point, which is around choice and flexibility, right? So, you know, you probably have four, maybe even five demographic cohorts in many workplaces at the moment. And each of those cohorts value and appreciate different things differently, you know. So you might have somebody who's near retirement age and pension is more important to them, whereas you may have somebody in their 20s who care not so much about life insurance, but actually really want pet insurance, right? And, you know, one of the big blockers to providing more choice and flexibility to employees in the past has been the administrative burden around it. But there's actually been quite a lot of investment in terms of technology platforms and service providers over the last number of years, which I think is and will transform that space, where we will ultimately, our own companies will be, you know, much more easily able to provide more choice, more flexibility, so that employees can tailor and personalize their rewards package in a way which maximizes their perceived value, as opposed to having a fixed one size fits all for everybody in an organization. So I think that will be a bit of a game changer over the next number of years. We're beginning to see a lot more solutions in that space. And I think, to me, that's the ultimate in terms of being smart around your reward spend. It's allowing people to spend it in a way that maximizes the value that they perceive on that package.
I suppose, Mary, my question is then, and not to be kind of devil's advocate about it, but what's the cost of getting this wrong? Is it as simple as you'll just lose people, or is there other kind of parts to it, you know, that kind of.
I guess in any rewards program, and I, you know, I say it all the time on this podcast. I'm sure the audience gets sick of me saying it, but you know, we're HR people. What are we there to do? We are there to support the organizational strategy. So there's a huge cost of getting it wrong. All over the country at the moment, we see vacant roles, which are being filled at a much higher pay rate than the last incumbent in that particular role. So there's a huge cost to getting it wrong. And I have a real concern when it comes to, you know, hybrid versus, you know, remote working practices. If it's not employee-centric and you are saying you must be in the office 3 days a week, and somebody says no, but there are other organizations out there that will give me the kind of life that I actually want, well, then those people are going to leave you. And so organizations need to be a bit careful about the decisions that they're making and be really thoughtful about the why. I don't know if either of you saw that Google in the Bay Area in the US have said that people must come back 3 days a week, and they seem, you know, I've heard it called the great reconsideration in terms of, you know, now that the pandemic is, you know, endemic. I don't know if that's the correct way of even saying that about the pandemic. I'm not quite sure how we're meant to describe it now, but is it over? Is it not? I don't actually know. But if it's endemic and you know, over to a large extent, and restrictions are unlikely to occur in the future in the same way that we've seen them in the past, our employer is now going to say you must come into work for X amount of time in the office. And will there be a lot of resignations as a result of that? I'll be really interested to watch this space. But when you see major players like Google bring in those changes, well, then others will follow. And so we've got to watch that space. But right now in Ireland, from what I can see, people want remote work. And the hardest jobs to fill right now are the jobs requiring people to be on site, even for 2 days a week. They're the hardest jobs to fill. So there's a small proportion of people who want them. So employers need to really think very carefully, you know, what are we after? Who do we want? How do we get them? How do we attract and retain them? You know, if you're having fertility issues, finding an employer that will help you with what is extremely costly treatments might be a life-changing move for you. And if you're aware that employers out there are providing something like that, then you are going to go and find them and dedicate yourself to that particular employer. And that the loyalty that something like that will engender is huge. So yes, people will vote with their feet. They will leave your organization if you're not giving them what they want or what they believe others on the market are offering. But at the same time, I'm not a big fan of just following a trend. So, you know, all over the country, we've got massive diversity and inclusion programs, some of them meaningless, some of them incredible. You know, think carefully about what you're doing and why you're doing it, and spend your money wisely when it comes to pay and reward, because it's very, very important for your organization's ability to deliver upon strategy.
Mm-hmm. And I think we always try to, I suppose, for the final question, Oliver, we always try to end with some advice that people can kind of, our listeners can kind of get going and actually write stuff down and kind of make moves forward. And I know Mary's alluded to some of the questions there, Oliver, but so my final question is, what are some of the key questions that HR teams should kind of ask themselves when it comes to designing, implementing, reevaluating their rewards program?
Yeah, good question. And so I'm probably going to go back a little bit to the foundation stones that I talked about earlier, you know, so which is really, I suppose, you know, being clear around your business growth strategy, the talent strategy that supports that, and then figuring out how to position rewards in a way that that supports those objectives. Because look, there's lots and lots and lots of things you can do in the reward space, but without a guiding light and a framework within which to make those decisions, it can seem quite random in terms of how you're approaching it. So the questions I would suggest a HR leader or HR team begin to explore is, first of all, you know, be clear and understand where is the business going over the next 5 to 10 years and what will be the key drivers of that growth. And then start to distill that down in terms of, you know, what does that mean in terms of talent for the organization, and where will that talent come from? What industry, what companies, from countries? And then think about how can you position rewards to really sort of give you an edge in attracting and retaining that talent. You know, how can you leverage rewards to help you stand out from the pack, whether that's in introducing some, you know, reward programs that we discussed earlier that maybe are new, that are innovative, and that really sort of signal the brand and the culture and who you are as an organization. But also think about, you know, those roles or those talent segments where you really want top talent, true A players, and don't be afraid to differentiate your reward positioning to help you sort of achieve that, because oftentimes they are roles where they'll give you a disproportionate impact in terms of your ability to deliver on your business strategy. So I think some of the other questions would be around, you know, be clear in terms of what are the key measures of success for your business, and, you know, make sure that your incentive programs, whether that's your bonus or your sales incentive or your long-term incentive, if you have one, you know, make sure that there's proper line of sight between what you incentivize in those programs and the ultimate measures of success of the overall organization. And then I think there's also something around your culture and the behaviors that you're trying to foster and grow within your business, because there are ways that you can sort of begin to incorporate and promote those within your reward framework. And the last thing I'd say, and this is an obvious one, but I think worth calling out, is, you know, your rewards vision and framework has to be sustainable from a cost perspective as well. So, you know, there's no point in having a vision if you can't execute and deliver on it, because the margins of your business don't allow that to happen. So it's about, you know, yes, be bold, be brave in terms of your vision, but then do that sense check as well to make sure that it's sustainable from a long-term cost perspective. So there are kind of some of the questions on that that I would suggest HR teams should be asking themselves in the context of getting started on this journey.
I ask you, Oliver, when it comes then to an organization and the starting point, you know, how do we do this? Do we have the capability internally to look at this in the way that you're suggesting? How would they engage with someone like you, or how would someone like you work with an organization to help them in this area?
So there's probably a number of different pieces to that. I always go further upstream in terms of, first of all, understanding the business strategy, right? And oftentimes you can do that in a number of ways. Lots of organizations will be able to provide you with a 30, 50 page deck that will articulate what their vision is over the next number of years. But actually where the value comes is in doing is talking to the executives within the organization. So just simply doing one-on-ones with them and helping through a series of questions to understand where is the business going, what are the priorities, what are the problems, what keeps you awake at night, and actually getting their perspective as well in terms of their views and reward. And you find that you get very rich color and insight from each of the execs that then allows you to actually begin to distill certain themes, right, in relation to, based on where the business is going, what does that mean in terms of talent, and what does that mean essentially around where they will be competing for talent, that allows you to distill themes that ultimately you can craft into a set of principles and into a set of into a reward philosophy. So really, I don't think that there is a an alternative to you know, one-on-one conversation with the senior leaders in the organization to start to understand and explore the that direction of travel. And look, some organizations have reward teams and have, you know, resources within their HR team that they are quite proficient and capable of exploring that journey. And then other organizations like the independent external perspective of some having somebody come in and partner with the HR leader and the HR team in terms of exploring that future with the leadership team and with the executives in the organization. So different companies take a different approach to it depending on the resources that they have and their style for approaching projects and change projects like this.
And I think it goes back to so many things we talk about on this podcast. It goes back to just a little bit of creativity, listening to the employee voice, and it seems to go a long way. And I must say, Mary, that was an even better closing question than my one, so thanks for that. So, thank you, massive thank you to Mary and Oliver for a very insightful discussion. Hopefully we gave people some good guidance there and things they can take away and really get going on reward programs. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Oliver.
Thanks
a lot, Owen.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.